Blog Talk Radio.
Friday night, and that little beat there means that it's time for the political consciousness of Slick Pavlovic. Man, we have a lot to talk about this week. We're going to talk a little bit about grand juries with Attorney Vanell. We're also going to talk about recent dealings in the White House. Mr. Bannon is gone, and whether or not this is an enemy that Mr. Trump really wants to make, and does it really change anything in the White House? We're also going to be talking about, the recent events in Charlottesville and the comments by David Duke. So we have a lot to talk about tonight, and let's get right to it. I think I'm going to go a little bit out of order here. First of all, let me introduce Janet Vanell. Janet, how are we doing this evening?
Hi, how are you, James? I was looking forward to tonight. We've had quite the week, so I'm ready to go.
Okay. Attorney Vanell, how are you doing this evening?
Fine. How about yourself? How is everything?
Everything's fine out here in California. The weather's good. There's nothing too much for me to complain about except the administration that we currently have in the White House. I really want to start with you because I want to get some inkling into the grand jury and what powers it does really have and what powers the president could possibly have to avert these true bills. So the first thing I want you to let our audience know is what exactly is a grand jury and what is its duties?
A grand jury is a body of individuals that are selected from each county. It usually in Florida, you need 12 grand jurors to vote a conviction. What a grand jury does, they investigate facts, take testimony, look at evidence to determine if there is probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed. If they feel that a crime has been committed, they return what is called a true bill or an indictment. Or if they find insufficient evidence to make that determination, there is no bill, and the case is over at that particular point. If a true bill or indictment is returned by the grand jury, in Florida, or the state court, you need a minimum of 12 grand jurors in order to return an indictment. In a federal court, they have grand jurors that go up in number to 23, which is the maximum, and 16, which is the minimum. In any event, if an indictment is returned and probable cause is found, then the case will be submitted to a petit jury. That's usually composed of 6 to 12 jurors. And the powers of a grand jury and an indictment is usually limited only to capital criminal cases. A grand jury, though, can involve itself with investigations of corruption of public officials, any type of an investigation that's referred to the grand jury. The grand jury is conducted by the prosecutor, and the prosecutor will present the witnesses and the evidence for the jurors to decide.
Now, are there any guidelines between civil and criminal indictments, or is that the discretion of the grand jury?
Actually, the most discretion is in the hands of the prosecutor or state attorney in Florida. He presents the case to the grand jury. He brings in the witnesses at his discretion. He introduces whatever evidence in his discretion. These are the limits or non-limits, if you remember in the Ferguson case, that particular prosecutor limited the presentation of the evidence presented to that jury, a grand jury, and they returned in Oakville. And the officer involved in the shooting and killing was exonerated. That's in the prosecutor's discretion. The grand jurors only hear it, and they make their determination as to whether the prosecutor has given them sufficient evidence to return an indictment.
Are there witnesses in the grand jury?
Well,
the first thing
I wanted to ask you, because we saw this, we are seeing this with Mueller, what is the purpose of having multiple grand juries as he has done, and why is it necessary to separate the cases for the grand jury?
Well, in separating the cases, the jury that's hearing is limited to maybe one particular set of facts that may be very involved and intricate to an extent that they might return one indictment. A second grand jury of the same people hearing a different case, different set of facts completely. You don't want to confuse the grand jury. They're not lawyers. And so when you have a complex case like what is happening now with the administration of Trump, there's multiple cases involved, multiple crimes and charges, and from what you can read and see on television, it's very complex. So they assign one particular grand jury, one or maybe two cases to investigate the same individual. But to burden one jury with all the crimes contemplated in the Trump campaign would be too much for any juror to really make a fair determination.
Going to Janet's question about the witnesses, what witnesses go before the grand jury? And you mentioned the prosecutor, but does the defense have any role in this particular part of the process?
That's in the hands of the district attorney, the prosecutor, as to what witnesses he may call for that particular set of facts and that particular crime. In this particular case, it would seem like that Manafort and Flynn will be certainly called, and they'll probably be, from what I understand, chief witnesses know the facts much better than probably any other individuals.
And are they allowed to plead the fifth?
Well, not the grand jury. The witnesses coming before the grand jury can take the Fifth Amendment and not answer a particular question. Sometimes they call a witness with the idea that they may indict him. They certainly will not inform him of that particular direction, but he might very well take the Fifth Amendment if an individual does take the Fifth Amendment, then the recourse of the prosecutor is taken before the judge, and if the judge in a particular case feels that the man may be incriminating himself, he may not sentence him or find him guilty of contempt. If he feels the man is unjustifiably taking the Fifth Amendment, he might very well hold him in contempt. And usually the sentence is somewhat indefinite. It's during the life of the grand jury as a minimum.
And they can go up to 18 months.
Yes. In federal court, they certainly can hold somebody in contempt, jail them for at least 18 months.
You were talking about the, you know, how far is there any scope or limit to the scope of investigation that a grand jury can take? And we talked about the Fifth, what about the matter of immunity? Is it the prosecutor that grants immunity, or is it the grand jury that grants immunity?
It's the prosecutor that can grant immunity. He knows best what the witness knows and doesn't know, and he can weigh the value of the testimony. If he feels that the testimony could be valuable enough to grant immunity, he would grant immunity. But most times in multiple times, so let's say with more than one individual, immunity is more or less granted if they feel they have a weak case, and they'll have one of the co-conspirators, one of the people involved in a crime. Usually they might grant immunity or special terms of sentence in order to get the testimony that they need. But immunity, it comes in two sections, actually. You can grant limited immunity, which would mean that the government or the prosecutor will not use any evidence that you or testimony that you may give, and that would be the extent of the immunity that's granted. Sometimes that would be sufficient for somebody who's facing charges that whatever he might say cannot be used against him in court. And then there's the general immunity, which is immunity from the crime itself. That usually ends any possible charges against a person that's given general immunity.
Okay, now, can in this case, can Trump commute a true bill?
they will probably bring it before a grand jury in federal court. They work with grand juries a lot more than the state court. State court usually charges it as a criminal with an information that goes in for misdemeanors as well as felonies. In state court, like Florida, usually the only time they'll use a grand jury is on a capital case where a death penalty is involved. In federal court, the grand jury hears all cases. The grand, except maybe misdemeanors, could be charged by the prosecutor. But in federal court, all felony crimes, capital cases included, are brought before grand juries by the prosecutor.
Yeah, I think you missed the question there, Lou. Can the president commute? Commute, I guess that is the word, right? Commute grand jury true bill.
The president can commute a sentence, but by that I mean it's usually somebody in jail and sentenced, and they'll reduce the sentence. That's what they would commute as distinguished from a pardon. A pardon, which is also within the power of the president, they are exonerated. They are forgiven of any crime like it never happened. That is usually the president's decision. I think in the Scooter Libby case, President Bush commuted the sentence. He didn't pardon him. But in the Nixon case, which is the only precedent, I think, that exists today relating to a presidential pardon, in that particular case, the pardon was given by President Ford, and the crimes allegedly against him were all forgiven, and they never did charge him. That's an unusual situation, because usually a pardon occurs after a prisoner serves his complete sentence. In the case of Nixon, he not only didn't serve a sentence, he wasn't even at that point charged. That is the precedent, I believe, that will probably be used in this case with respect to Trump. Although Trump usually, what I think may happen with Trump, I don't think that, I'm not certain who would be success the president will be, but he may not pardon Trump. I don't think that this has been up for debate recently. I don't think that Trump can issue a pardon for himself. I believe that although there is a precedent in the case of Nixon, he used another successor president, which seemed to be the law that will be established in the case of Trump.
So
Trump, and I think that was limited to Watergate, too. I mean, I guess he probably didn't do anything else.
So a person has to go to jail before they can be their sentence could be commuted or pardoned. There's nothing that he could do. You know, when we were talking a few weeks ago about him talking about pardoning, his son, son-in-law, or any of those people. He was looking for advice. So these people that are indicted or going to trial, they would have to have a trial and they would go through the complete process before there could be any talk of a pardon or commuting their sentence.
That would appear to be true. Although pardons were given, like to Nixon, without trial, that sort of established a precedent. In this particular case, certainly you got Trump's family involved, certainly if he feels that the hammer is going to fall, he's probably going to try and pardon whatever members of the family or associates he wants to. So that pardon probably will be upheld, and that's the end of the case of criminal charges. But I think what may happen is Trump is pretty smart, so he's not going to allow his family to be in jeopardy, and he'll probably pardon him if he feels that he's getting close to indictment or maybe a trial or whatever. I think that in order to ensure that he has not the power to issue pardons for any family member, I think that the prosecution, Mueller, may implement the 25th Amendment remove Trump from office so as to take away the power that he may have to issue pardons. That's only my political feeling in order to safeguard the criminal case and the integrity of the charges. He would have to be president in order to do it. So I don't think they're going to file these charges while Trump is in office because they wouldn't want to have these charges given a pardon, and that's the end of the case. That's really my feeling.
And the 25th Amendment has to be voted on in the first, I think it's the cabinet. And then, if that doesn't pass through the cabinet, I think then it's the Congress to.
Yeah, that 25th Amendment does implicate a congressional vote. I think it's 2/3 of both the House and the Senate. If I recall, the vice president is the one that's got to tap Trump on his shoulder and say, you're out because you're not fit to serve as president any longer. That would be the basis of the charge. So, and then it would be up to the Congress itself to remove him and impeach him.
When we talk about Manafort or General Maxwell, what is the difference between collusion and treason?
Well, collusion is much broader than treason. If you collude with somebody, it could be any type of crime, kidnapping, robbery. That's an agreement. It's tantamount to an agreement between two people to commit a crime or a conspiracy. Treason is limited to the fact that you are committing a crime against the United States. you're violating one of the laws that citizens are required to follow. They can't put in jeopardy the United States by using information that could benefit an enemy, something like that, something that violates the integrity of the United States.
Well, this man is a general. He's taken an oath. He's been in the highest echelons of the military. Why would not the treason, why would not, you know, this apply to him, or would he have to be, would this have to be a part of a military tribunal or, you know, a law under military justice?
Which general is this?
I don't think the prosecution is limited to the military. A grand jury, I think, could handle charges of treason and collusion itself. With respect to Trump, I do believe, from what I see and read, that he could very well be charged with not only conspiracy or collusion, but treason as well. I think that he's jeopardized the safety of the people of the United States. I believe that he's betrayed his citizenship requirements not to betray the country, put it in jeopardy by any means. And I think that what he did with Russia and the election, it stands now to treason. And I think he should be so charged, along with the myriad of other crimes that it would appear that he committed.
James, did you want to comment on it?
It's interesting in itself because on two occasions, I remember Trump, prior to his ever running, mentioning two people that he felt were they should be charged and found guilty of treason. One was Ed Snowden, which, you know, we were all in shock when he did what he did. And Trump spoke out very loudly about the fact that Russia should send him back here and he should be tried for treason. I kind of actually agree with him on that. Of course, Snowden is still in Russia. And then the other one that I don't recall if Trump actually said this, but John Walker Lynn was a young man, but nevertheless, he wasn't that young. And he went to join Al-Qaeda. And if you recall this was during the Bush administration, if you recall the journalist David Pearl was captured and beheaded in Afghanistan. And, you know, that was just a horrendous thing. And this John Walker Lynn was there. And after that, he wrote home, and his father apparently had many letters about why he felt that the United States was wrong about a laundry list of things, and so he had joined Al-Qaeda and was actually fighting alongside of them. Now he's in this camp or whatever that was where they beheaded David Pearl, and he's now a wreck and decides, I want to come home. And he wound up getting, he was not charged with treason. I forgot what they charged him with. But he did get 10 years, which is really pretty good, I'd say, you know, considering. We were right. It was right after 9/11 and all that, everything that was happening. And I think that Trump had said that he should have been charged with treason. Actually, I agree with him myself on that one too, because he was aiding the enemy, you know, aiding and abetting the enemy, and he was present. And now all of a sudden he wants to be an American again. So in that light, you know, I think, you know, certain things are, you know, and also national security and all those type of things. But what I didn't catch before was which general were we speaking about?
Maxwell.
McMaster? No.
Maxwell, the first, the one that was part of his campaign, and then they found out that he was working for what? Turkey?
Oh yeah, Michael Flynn. Yeah. Michael Flynn.
Oh yeah.
Was he still an active general? I'm not sure. He had worked. While he was still in the service, he had worked as a general. He had worked for Obama for a little bit. And then Obama actually fired him because he gave classified information to the Afghanis. He gave it to British and New Zealand and Australia, which was okay, but not Afghanistan. We don't give classified information. We shouldn't have. And President Obama did fire him, but President Obama, being President Obama, gave him the option to resign so he wouldn't lose all his pension and all that type of thing. And, you know, he was just always a gentleman regardless. And then somehow Flynn works his way back in. So I don't think Flynn is still part of the military, really, although they maintain their titles, you know, forever. But I'm not really sure. I think that he's got a real problem. Personally, I think he has a problem just by not reporting the fact that he was working for Turkey for 2 years while he was also working for the United States, or, you know, government, which is crazy. You know, I mean, if he was working for, you know, a Turkish restaurant somewhere, it would be a different story in Turkey. But if you're working for a foreign government and you don't report it, and you're working for our government at the same time, you know, I don't know what else you call that. Because it seems to me like you're working for the enemy, plus his relationship with Russia as well, and his being, you know, I mean, it's documented with his dinners and sitting with Putin and all that type of thing. So, I mean, his attorney wanted immunity a few months ago, and they didn't give it to him. But I guess they figured they were hedging their bets and waiting to see what he really had to say, because he says he has quite a story. I'd love to hear it. And we may very well hear it. He might. I think he is going to wind up getting immunity. He may already have it, and we don't know, because, you know, there's so many things we don't know. But he was definitely one of the few, or many, that was passing messages back and forth with the Russians during post-election, but pre-inauguration. And you're not allowed to do that, to say the least. So that, I think Flynn does have a pretty major problem, and I think he knows it. I mean, obviously he knows it, or he wouldn't have asked for immunity that long ago. And I learned this from Lou about, you know, how they don't just give you immunity. They want to know what you have before you get it. So if it's good enough and you tell them what they need, you know, for something that's bigger and more important, then they'll give you immunity. If you're just coming in and saying, you know, I saw the guy, you know, whatever, then and it's not worth it, they're not going to do it. But yeah, I've been troubled myself about this pardon thing, because, you know, I think it's a little bit of uncharted waters that we're in with the pardoning in this case. I mean, if they're able to push through that Amendment 25 before the indictments come down, that would be great. At least, you know, I mean, great insofar as we have Pence as president, but I'm not so sure how great that is, but nevertheless, we won down. And then those pardons wouldn't be so forthcoming. I'm not so sure that Pence would be quick to pardon Trump's family and friends either.
We're going to talk a little bit about Pence at the show. I want to get into that also. You're definitely right about that. When you talk about Manafort and his role in the Trump administration, along with Flynn, Manafort hasn't, at least to our knowledge, been a candidate for immunity. As you said, Flynn has already asked for it. But do you think that Manafort, being maybe a little closer to Trump and the family, might have a little bit more to offer as far as domestic violations concerning Trump, Lou?
I think that between Flynn and Manafort, Flynn probably is a lot closer to Trump. I've never seen anybody push so hard to say he's a great guy, nice guy, he didn't do anything wrong, like Trump does, and did, rather, with Flynn. I didn't hear him back up except one time recently, and Manafort, like he fought for Flynn, he didn't put up any sort of battle as far as Manafort is concerned. I think that these two guys committed serious crimes. I don't think that the crimes amount to treason. I think Snowden, Lynn, and you mentioned another one. I think definitely that they committed treason. I know Trump campaigned on the fact that Snowden should be charged with treason. I think so also. But compared to what I feel the crimes that Trump committed, Snowden is like a Boy Scout. This Trump, I think, put in jeopardy the safety of every American. I believe that his policies were so damaging and reckless that it's going to take a long while before this country can regain its position in the world. I mean, changing the results of the election, which he very well did, and championing Russia over the United States, belittling intelligence or military. He knows more than any general. The guy, to me, committed a treason. He is, in my mind, what he did to this country, he is certainly a traitor.
I have to go into North Korea here just a moment. And I want to bring back, kind of our experiences in Vietnam. As long as it was North Vietnam and South Vietnam, the Viet Cong and whatnot, even though they were backed up by North Vietnamese regulars, it wasn't really a danger or a talk of moving out, getting out of Vietnam, and I don't know whether this is public information or not, because it took certain military forces to go into certain places where we weren't allowed. But we started finding Chinese advisors among these North Vietnamese units. And we had a country like China talking about, you know, possibly going in and helping North Vietnam, which is just, you know, really a term that at that time meant, you know, either get out or, you know, China's going to intervene. We're kind of used to having bigger nations, China, Russia, for instance, kind of competing with them and, you know, being known as a world power. But now we have a little country like North Korea that is, for all intents and purposes, bullying us. They have made statements that we are like jelly. They can crush us at any moment. Janet, I mean, have you ever in your lifetime seen smaller countries try to intimidate the United States, you know, without essentially the help of a strong world power?
No, not in my lifetime. And I think that I don't think enough credit has been given to Obama and Bush and Clinton, even though the two of them, I think, dealt with Kim Jong-un's father, who we thought was crazy until this guy came along. But I don't think it's necessarily a great idea to antagonize this guy somehow or other, I don't really believe that I think he wants us to feel that he couldn't crush us. I mean, we know he couldn't crush us, but he wants us to believe that he is a world power. And I think he feels belittled, and I think he's another one of these, you know, sociopath, you know, kind of crazy people. I mean, obviously, I think he had his own stepbrother killed, and he killed his own uncle. But at the same time, I think when you have factions like, when you have two personalities that are almost the same in a way, Trump and Kim Jong-un, you know, where Obama, we try to talk to him or send people to talk to him and try to work things out diplomatically, at least keep things low and quiet-ish, you know, like not be, that he's sending his missiles up and not making it, and, you know, that type of thing. But he never really, Obama and even the father was never really challenged to do something. And I think that, you know, by looking to antagonize him, I don't think that's the best idea, because basically, first of all, why do we need this, number one? But second, he could, and as crazy as he is, Kim Jong-un could just knock out Seoul in South Korea so fast. I mean, in a matter of minutes, you'd have 2 or 3 million people dead, boom, gone. I mean, before any retaliation could even take place. And I was just kind of reading about that and how we even, you know, what even happened with Korea to start with, because that was one conflict that American history kind of skirts over. You know, at least it skirted over for me, and I went to a school that really excelled in American history, and somehow Korea was kind of like a footnote practically. But I mean, nothing like you know, Vietnam was. And it was I just feel like if you push this guy, he's not the kind of a young crazy kid to back down. And you know, you got it. I think I don't know how old he is, in his 30s or something. And with a 71-year-old bully from the school too, you know. And it just seems to be so insane. And at least I did hear that the South Korean president or prime minister, I think it's president, they have been speaking, or they are speaking or trying to speak to him to calm things down, because they know, and the president the other day, I hate to call him that, but when, as Whoopi Goldberg, we call him the guy in the office now, was carrying on and carrying on and carrying on. And it was just like, oh, my God, like, why, like, just be quiet, you know, please, just be quiet for a little bit. And it seemed that, you know, South Korea, of course, is sitting there, as is Guam, sitting there waiting to be, you know, blown up, basically. So let's say, okay, they're not going to win, and so big deal, they're not going to win. But is it okay then to kill maybe 3 or 4 million Americans and maybe a few million South Koreans as well, and whoever else it might be there, and North Koreans, you know, it's that are also, it's not their fault that they have this lunatic. I mean, and what are we doing? And I was reading about this, and what are we doing? Are we looking for regime change? I mean, what are we doing? And then it doesn't seem to me that China's stepping up to the plate so much for us, you know, with North Korea either. So I think, you know, we have to be a little bit careful. And then I didn't realize it that Mattis, who at first I was happy he was going to be Secretary of Defense, because I thought, well, we'll have somebody normal in the administration. And now I'm not so happy, because now, you know, I understand that Mattis was very much a hawk and would just love to go into Korea. And I thought, okay, that's crazy. Maybe he should have stayed in retirement, because I don't think that's a, you know, to get into something like that on that scale with everything else that's going on in the whole world, I don't know. I just think that, you know, we're just crazy. I mean, it's just a crazy thing. Naturally, if he did do something first, then, you know, we have to retaliate. But, you know, he's been pretty quiet the last week, I guess. And, you know, this, and it would really be ironic if South Korea ever, you know, made or had some kind of a peace treaty or something with North Korea. That would be the irony of all time, that with everybody that's trying to do this and can't get it done, that these two guys could get it done. It would be amazing and great. I take my hats off to him for that. But it could be, you know, it's less scary for me than it probably is for you in California, because of where his missiles are supposed to be able to hit. I don't know that it can. But like we,
and,
I think we said
and
last
I live,
week.
And, huh? I live in San Diego, where there is at least one carrier group as well as a submarine base. So, yes, we are.
Yeah, my brother was in the Navy and stationed for a while out there in San Diego. So I know exactly where that Navy base is. It's beautiful out there, too. But it's a scary thought, particularly when the whole world is just insane. I mean, when you think about everything else going on in the world, this is like, what? You know, kind of thing. And I sounds like insane, but I almost feel like Kim Jong-un wants just to be recognized as a power of some kind, you know, almost like humor him, instead of, you know, when this is the wrong president to try to get along, because he's just, it's like, if you dare me to do it, I'm doing it. I mean, that's his thing. And now we've got somebody that is almost suicidal and to some degree to say, yeah, even though he probably wouldn't get killed anyhow. But it's almost like he doesn't – if you challenge – if Trump says, you know, this is – I think it's pink, and you say, well, I think it looks a little more lavender. Well, it's pink. I mean, period. And that's the and that's how, you know, I think, like, why are you sparring with a guy, a young a kid probably doesn't even realize what he's really, really doing. I mean, he loves it, but he, but who knows? You know, and it's just a, it's a lose-lose as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what we would win by winning. You know, if you want to call that winning, what would we win by winning? You know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's, I think everybody feels kind of similar. You know, I don't think too many people really want to be jumping into wars all over the world, you know, every 10 minutes. And, you know, I'm hoping that maybe the South Korean president really does make some inroads with them, and we don't wind up having that, because there's a lot of innocent people that will get killed for absolutely nothing. I mean, there's just nothing that's going to be accomplished. I don't believe anything would be accomplished. You know.
Lou, I want to bring you in here because we might know a tad more about the history of the Korean War. We know that, you know, even though we agreed on, I believe it, what was the 23rd parallel or whatever it was, that we would go back to, the reason that the Korean War ended and was finally brought to truce, stalemate, whatever you want to call it, was because of the actions of China, not only militarily, but diplomatically. As Janet said, we see China kind of soft pedaling here. There's no, no real threats issued like we saw back in the Cold War days. Do you think that China has softened its view on North Korea, or do you think that they would spring to the defense as they did before?
Well, I was listening to your comments, and I was reminiscing about a particular situation, a scenario of events and people. They were doing analysis to this situation. There was a comic character, Charles Atlas, and the cartoon would show some of people on a beach, and you see this big guy come along. There's a small kid, and he kicks sand in his face, and the direction was taken was, hey, you can do that too. You can have muscles. You take my course, Charles Atlas, and you'll be bigger than him and take care of him. So you're looking at the relative size of somebody, and this, the kid can absolutely get bigger and more muscular and take care of his eye. I use that as an analogy with Korea and the United States. If you take this little kid up against this muscle guy, and he gave him a gun, you know, to get how many muscles he got, I mean, he could be dead. So I look at Korea that way. This could be a real small country, which it is, against a giant United States. And I don't think we know what their military capacity is. They advertise, they got this new missile, they can put a nuclear bomb on the tip, and we don't know how many missiles they got like that. And even Washington, New York, Los Angeles, something like that, I mean, you can demolish the United States with enough of those missiles, even though that country is small. Now you look at these Korean people and their goose step. I mean, you can't get better precision when you see those troops marching and the tanks and all the missiles they got. And you look at the Korean people and the soldiers and whatever, and they got blood in their eyes. They're not afraid of the United States. they say, let's go, let's go. And you take a guy like the ruler, this crazy person, and while his whole country stops, he's building up the military. So you got a guy that's really a nutcase and can do a lot of damage to the United States. You take, for instance, Afghanistan, a small country, but Russia couldn't beat them because of the terrain, because of the difficulty in finding a target. Now in Korea, what kind of targets you have? They got mountains, and we don't know which mountain is military, filled with arms or missiles. Or I mean, you got to spread your bombs or your nuclear weapon, if you use it, pretty much all around the country in order to be effective. I just feel that size in this particular case, it doesn't count so much. The United States is facing a predicament as long as this guy is up there and you got a ruler like that, you never know what's going to happen. So I feel inevitably we're going to have to do something to eradicate that particular menace. Unfortunately, while it looks like it's imminent now, I'm afraid that Trump is not the guy that can lead and guide us in any sort of battle or war with North Korea or anybody. If not Trump, I mean, it's trigger happy until, as much so as Un in North Korea. Recently, he wanted to aim or attack or Venezuela. I mean, ridiculous. But in that 1 week, he was shooting in Iraq, 59 missiles, whatever.
In Syria.
In Syria, ready to go. And I say that sooner or later, we're going to have to do something with Korea, but not with Trump. I certainly wouldn't put my money on the same thing, really successful with Trump guiding us, leading us.
I think that really, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that if we got involved with something ridiculous like this and insane with Korea, you know, we're going to win. We're going to win, I mean, obviously. But the thing is that the fatalities to win will be astronomical. And at the end of the day, for what? And that's the real thing. And I'm thinking, and my feeling is that if the South Korean president can somehow make some sort of peace or agreement or whatever, you know, just to keep things, you know, like level, then, you know, God bless him, you know, like let's go ahead and do it. Because you know, I think that this thing could turn into, it could just turn into a nightmare. And, you know, ironically, I had trouble sleeping the other night, and I turned on the television, and what's on but Pearl Harbor? So I'm like, I'm watching this thing, and I'm like, oh, my God, this was crazy. And I had an uncle that was at Pearl Harbor. And just the whole thing was so bizarre and crazy. And just thinking how this emperor would not surrender, and I thought to myself, how crazy can you be? But I think we have a few hanging around the world right now that are just as crazy, that don't care if their people get killed. I mean, it's not an issue with them. I mean, if they get killed, they get killed. I mean, they don't seem to really care about it. And so that was a heck of a movie to turn on like at midnight and wind up watching until 3 in the morning. But it's...
I have to interrupt you for because I'm watching MSNBC as we talk. And the KKK has reportedly, they're going to have a rally in Boston on Saturday. Okay. In Boston, no less. Now, this is going to take me back to a conversation that I also had prepared for us tonight. And I'm going to read this just as it came out. This marks the turning point for people in our country. We are determined to take our country back. Duke said, we are going to fulfill the promises of Donald Trump. That is what we believed in. That's why we voted for Donald Trump. Now, we've seen how he backpedaled and fiddle-faddled his way for 3 days to find words to condemn the neo-Nazis. Do you think that the words of the president and these words of Donald Trump have contributed to this rally on Saturday in what we consider one of the birthplaces of our nation?
Well, if you're asking me, I absolutely do. Because what we saw in Charlottesville, I think that's the first time I saw the Klan without their hoods and sheets and what have you. I think it's the first time I saw they're marching through the street with the Nazi slogans and blood and soil or whatever. And, I mean, they did it boldly. They did it without... It had nothing to do with that, with the statue of Robert E. Lee. That was just an excuse. And then when Trump came out and initially said whatever, and then he came back and
he said that there were good people on both sides.
Yeah. Find me a couple that were on the other side, on their side. And then, David Duke, of course, did, I think, tweet something like how great and wonderful he is. And then he came out with another statement that was better. And then he backpedaled on that one and completely blew it out of the water. And I don't know what happened to him that day. I mean, Kelly looked like he was going to just drop on the floor. But, yeah, I think that... this thing in between, I know that Bannon's gone, but so what? I mean, at this point, I feel like that Trump has really emboldened every white supremacist, every Ku Klux Klan, every neo-fascist, whatever. It's just insane. I mean, Boston, of course, is like really ridiculous. But one of the things, and I know we're talking about Boston, but one of the things that bothered me the most about Charlottesville, and I did tweet this to Terry McAuliffe, where are the tanks, where is the tear gas that I saw in Baltimore, that I saw in Ferguson? Where are they? Why do you have a bunch of cops standing there kind of doing nothing, and until it got to be too crazy? I mean, I never did see any tanks. There may have been some tear gas, but I never did see any tanks. And why was this? I mean, this was so out there. I mean, they're just walking. You can just see who they are. I mean, and it's, I do believe it really did, however, damage Trump too. Because I was thinking about, I was listening to somebody say that there's like 917 groups that are like, crazy groups in the country. But really, I don't think that's 10% of the country, really. I mean, it's 350 million people here. And if they have a million people, I'd really be surprised. Or 10 million, I'd be surprised. Because the point is that I don't know what they think they're going to be doing. And then Trump is even, these ridiculous statements he comes out with I mean, it certainly emboldens them, but I don't think they're that bright either. Because, I mean, he's talking about, well, it's Robert E. Lee and then it's Stonewall Jackson. And I just read something that Robert E. Lee had said that he detested statues, even of his good friend Stonewall Jackson, because he just felt it was not an honorable thing. Well, it's not an honorable thing. I mean, and I did hear, I think it was Don Lemon, that said, imagine if you were a Jewish person in Germany and you were going to the Adolf Hitler High School or you were going to the Dr. Mengele School of Medicine, you know, things like that. I mean, how this shoved into your face every day, this isn't heritage. I mean, what kind of heritage is that? You know, it's these guys were traitors. I mean, they were traitors. And so I wish that this was an act with Trump. I really do. But, you know, he's just saying things to make people, whoever it is, like him at the time. But I don't really think it is, because I go back and think about his father and his grandfather and how his father had those apartment buildings and when he was just a young man, when Trump was a young man, and his father told him, or told the guy running the apartment buildings or something, not to rent to African Americans, and he didn't, and then he had to pay a huge fine to the country, the Department of Justice or whoever it was at the time, because I don't even think the Civil Rights Act was going yet, but.
And don't forget, you know, about the KK rally where his father was arrested.
And his grandfather, and these kind of things really, it's crazy. It's almost like the person that, you know, commits a crime and then tells you don't commit the crime, even though I did, okay. And his grandfather came here and from Germany, and he committed some kind of a crime, and we United States deported him back to Germany, and then he was in Germany and he committed fraud, so they were going to send him to prison, and he made an appeal to the United States to let him back in here, and we took him back. So I mean, talk about immigration crazy. There's the most crazy immigration I've ever heard. And then he later on became a silver shirt. And I don't know if you're familiar with the silver shirt. I wasn't. But I saw it one night on I think it's American History Channel or American something channel. And they talked about silver shirts. And silver shirts were these guys that were waiting for Hitler to win. And then he had plans eventually to take over the United States, and the Silver Shirts were going to be his disciples, you might say, and were hoping to be part of the takeover of the United States. So I'm thinking, wow, this thing is going on forever with him. And, you know, he didn't notice it back then because who was paying attention to him? You know, nobody. And, you know, like, I think primarily the people that voted for him knew him from a Celebrity Apprentice or from Apprentice. They didn't know him from being a builder or golf courses and things like that and all the, you know, the lawsuits and all the nightmares that he's put people in. So it's in his DNA. I really believe that. And it's sad. I mean, it's really sad. But I don't think they're going to be very successful in Boston, that's for sure. And since they have, you know, they're being forewarned and, you know, they're going to be forearmed. Because I don't think Boston is going to sit still for that.
They're already talking about it, you know. So, I mean, you know, they're already talking about people organizing counter demonstrations and whatnot.
But you know what the thing is, it's like, their demonstrations as opposed to, let's say, like, originally that was supposed to be a demonstration in Charlottesville. Well, you don't go to a demonstration, you know, with sticks and bats and all the other, you know, things, chains or whatever else they had. That's not a demonstration. If you're having it's peaceful assembly, that's okay. But, you know, if you don't like the idea that a statue's coming down, whatever, it is what it is. But that's not a reason to start attacking people and then that lunatic, you know, running into those people and killing that poor girl. That's not peaceful assembly, guys. You know, and I remember it well. I remember watching the Ferguson, and I don't want to call them riots. I'm going to just say the Ferguson demonstrations, or, you know, I mean, if they want to call it a demonstration, call it a demonstration. The thing is that I don't blame them. I don't. Because the thing is that, and this isn't just one place, but now, for them to come out, and Lou could definitely talk to how crazy Florida was in, you know, years ago. I mean, really nuts. And I believe it's actually gotten a bit better, at least in southern Florida. Northern Florida, I'm not so sure.
I think that's a fallacy that everybody buys into, that it's getting better. No, I don't think it's getting better. I think it's becoming more out front, which might be a better thing because now you know. But, Lou, I have to bring you in here because in our generation, the Klan came out with hoods and different ways of disguising their identity. Within the last, 5 years, maybe 7, they have decided that, they don't have to cover their identity anymore. They don't care who recognizes their faces, and they use a peaceful demonstration and TV as a way to disseminate their message of hate. Lewis, is this an indication that the Klan thinks that they're becoming more acceptable to mainstream America? Why all of a sudden have they removed their hoods, in your opinion?
Well, I have to say Trump has a lot to do with it. This is giving these crazy people biased, prejudiced, racist people an opportunity that they really haven't had for years. I've always said to myself that a person is a product of their environment. It's who they live with, who they go to school with, things like that, that develops thinking and ideas and policies. And you're talking about Trump, whether he really interested in the campaign thing or to build up a base. This is the real Trump. This is the racist Trump that had no problem keeping blacks out of his apartment houses, even if he had to pay a fine. So what? He's going to do it his way. We haven't had any real problems with racism for a number of years. We never saw parades like we're seeing now with these guys and they're not afraid to put up a swastika, a flag. They're not afraid to have armbands. They're not afraid to say kill the blacks or whatever. It's a part of their environment, and I'm afraid that society, they're quiet for a while. So I really think that people like Sessions and Trump and Barron, this guy that just was fired.
Bannon.
Yeah, this is them. They're not going to change. So I would think that right now I'm very gratified in the fact that this country is trying to unite. You see counter attacks by non-racist people that feel that, hey, this is America. Everybody's entitled to equal rights, equal votes. And I think that there's far more of non-racist people than racist. And I think that actually this Trump and his crew gave these people that were quiet, they didn't run around and gather up publicity. I think that it's going to take care of itself when you get rid of the leaders. I mean, you got the leaders that are racist. I mean, you know, right away, it's the non-racists that have to fight back at this point.
Leo, staying with you here. You know, Steve Bannon is out of the White House, according to most sources. It was General Kelly that finally said that it was time for him to go, and the president signed off on it. But is Steve Bannon just a sacrificial lamb for all of the things that have actually went on in the White House this week?
Well, I think... I don't think he's a sacrificial lamb. He's certainly not a lamb. He's of the same temperament, I feel, as Trump. I think that the reason why he's gone, I'll use the phrase that you did. In this instance, he was a sacrificial lamb. He was the most vulnerable. He was a guy that was out there that wasn't afraid to voices, racist views, and Trump wisely got rid of him because, like, he was taking Trump down. Trump doesn't want to be viewed as a racist, but like Tuesday, you saw it. You saw exactly what you know.
I wouldn't go as far as to say he took Trump down. I would say that Trump did it. I think Trump did it, and he did it. He didn't do it happily. I think he did it because I think that Kelly got a hold of him and just said, "Listen, you're going down. You are going down. You know, you asked me to come into this. I mean, I don't have any personal knowledge of this, but I know that he did ask him to come in and straighten the place out because it was chaos. And there's a few more chaotic people in there." And although Bannon may have been the worst. And I don't think that Trump really wanted to get rid of him, but it was just getting to a point of no return. And if Kelly would have resigned, which he may very well have said to him, it's him or me. And if he stepped down, that would be it. I mean, that would be it. But Bannon, I mean, he's got a long history of being an anti-black, anti-Jew, anti-Hispanic, anti-everything, except anti-whatever he is. I don't even know. I guess he just considers himself maybe, I don't even know what Bannon is, but maybe he considers himself the Aryan race or something. You know, and he's got a couple left there. I mean, he still has Gorka there. That every time I hear that man, I could just, you know, I want to shoot my television. That man actually wore a Nazi medal to Trump's inauguration. And somebody asked him about it. He goes, it would belong to my father. I'm proud of it. I'm like, seriously? Because that's something I would not be proud of. So, I mean, he's there. And that guy, Steve Miller, who is a Jew, which is crazy to me. And, like, what is he doing in the middle of that whole thing? And I don't know if you heard this or not. But Ivanka, and I, you know, you haven't seen much of Ivanka or Jared lately. I don't know where they're hiding. But the rabbi, you know, because she converted to Judaism, and which surprised me, but she did. And the rabbi who did the conversion, or whatever you call it, because I don't know what you call it, actually denounced Trump the other day. And,
yeah,
and told her, you know. And which, you know, I take my hat off to him at least, because, my goodness, how in the world can, how could you have this mix of crazy insanity? I mean, it's insanity. I can't even imagine what the rest of the world, other than Putin, I can't imagine what the rest of the world is even thinking about us. Like, have we all gone insane? Because the reason Putin is, Putin said that Trump's crazier than Kim Jong-un. Now, that's something, that's not something I'd want to be said about me. No, I might be called crazy, but not crazier than Kim Jong-un. You know, that's
I want you to kind of expand on this, because is Steve Bannon more dangerous now than when he was in the White House? Not only as far as the American people, but if he should decide to turn on Trump.
I think he's more dangerous now that he's left the post. I think he did enough damage while he was there as a chief advisor to to Trump. But there's no question that this guy is a racist of the nth degree. And right now, I think he's going to take a leadership position with his this organization or whatever.
He's already back at Breitbart.
Breitbart,
And he's already talking. I mean, he's already sent out a couple tweets as far as what he thought he saw in the White House and how he's going to go to war for President Trump against his enemies, whatever that means. We're coming down close to the end of the show, so I'm going to start with you, Leo. With all the attention that we're paying to Trump, his Twitter hysterics, the brashness, possible impeachment, have we forgotten about the politics of Mike Pence? And is Pence really a good alternative, or just more the same and maybe a little worse?
I don't think he's worse, but I certainly don't want to see him president. I mean, I think it's Indiana is his home state. It's very unpopular in Indiana, if I remember correctly. He was down on women's rights and abortion rights. And to an extent,
down on everything.
Yeah. So I remember that he suddenly passed laws that were against women's rights, and to an extent that they were losing business. Companies were moving out. So that's just a sample of what we know about his governing policies. No, I don't think that he would be a good president. But I think he could be better than Trump, at least as much as aggressive and anti-everything.
I think that I think from a foreign standpoint, he's probably better than Trump, because I don't think he's as much of a hawk. But domestically, I think he's as crazy as they come, you know, because to me, I don't even know what to call. I like to say he's a vanilla man, but he's not even vanilla. He's almost like translucent. He was the governor of Indiana, and no one was happier than he was leaving than people of Indiana. And he passed things against women. He passed things, all kind of pray the gay away. I mean, all the, it, just like, You know what? I feel like this. If I want a president. I don't want a rabbi. I don't want a priest. I don't want a minister. I don't want, you know, I don't want a clergyman as a president. And when somebody is going to, I have nothing against religion and I have nothing against, you know, clergymen, but I'd like them to stay where they belong, you know, separation of state and church. And he takes the evangelical line of everything, and this is what Jesus would do. Well, actually, that's not what Jesus would do, but that's what they rely upon. And he kind of reminds me a little bit of like Ted Cruz, who's also that just hard line right, and all about, you know, making, you know, we left, you know, we didn't want to be along to England anymore because of a lot of different reasons. But one of them, which the founding fathers did make very clear, is separation of church and state. And I mean, when a man says, "I will not have a eat dinner with a woman without my wife being there. I will not have a drink with a woman without my wife being there." I'm thinking, really, what's your problem? Because I don't remember anything about that in the Bible anyplace. I don't know what his issue is. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's almost as though, like, are you afraid of yourself? I mean, I'm not too sure. But I don't think he would last. I think the... And he may very well be under investigation as well. I mean, because he was a part of the transition team, so we don't really know what Mueller really has in that nice cozy place that he's got there with those 24, 26 very, very intelligent attorneys, and all those FBI guys. So we don't really know what he's going to come out with. But I'm just thinking that. I think the first thing we need to do is be rid of Trump, because I think he's really the worst. And then Pence is next. I don't know whether, I mean, if he makes it to 2020, he also has to appoint a vice president. And then maybe they'll go to town on Pence and be rid of him, and it'd be almost like a, you know, the Nixon, Agnew, that whole scenario. And then I think he had Rockefeller in there, and he died, and then he put Ford in there. But if I remember the whole thing in the right order. But I think for the moment, just getting rid of Trump would be great. I mean, that would be like a big, and I think the world might be kind of like, oh, you know, now at least we could get back to NATO and get back to maybe a little sanity as far as foreign policy. And then we have to go to work on domestic policy, which scares me a little bit, until I'm praying, and I probably shouldn't say that after I just went through that whole state and church thing, but I'm praying that in 2018, the Democrats come back with a vengeance. That's what I'm really praying for, because if they do, then we might be able to cruise into, and I mean cruise as in cruise, not cruz, into 2020, and come up with somebody that's Democrat that can really, you know, take us home and bring us back to, we've just lost, I think, about 50 years of progress in what, 7 or 8 months? So that's kind of how I feel. I absolutely do not like Pence. And Pence wanted to run for president, and even the Republican Party told him no. They even said, no, forget it. So he took a step back. And then lo and behold, this guy, you know, Trump picks him out of a hat. So that was pretty crazy. But I guess since he insulted everybody else that was running, he couldn't go back to any of them. But it was, I think our first thing would be getting rid of Trump, and then seeing what, hopefully 18 will bring us a lot of Democrats and kind of have a nice upheaval in the House and maybe even the Senate, or the Senate and even in the House, and maybe we can make it to 2020 without, you know, and get back on track. Because, I mean, these are scary days. You know, I've been this scared since the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, that's how crazy I feel it's been. So
wow.
That's...
You went way back there, right? Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know. You know, and you know, we talk about Vietnam, and I know a lot of guys I went to school with that had just gotten out of high school, and they were drafted, and they went right over, and I know a lot of guys that didn't come back, and some that came back that didn't come back so well, and, you know, so I was never against our troops, and I'll never be against our troops, but I sure was against that war. And I know there was a lot of craziness going on in Vietnam and the surrounding areas, and that we don't know about, you know, that was never really published. But you know, when we finally got out of that it was a good day, and you know, they seem to be doing okay. They seem to be doing all right.
Well, Vietnam is a very sensitive topic, especially when you talk to the guys, you know, that went there. We felt that we were never given a chance to win. We felt, especially once public opinion turned against the war, it was a no-win situation. And I can tell you, in 71, even though we left it, we didn't finally leave until 72, but a lot of us saw the handwriting on the wall in 1970 and knew that, you know, we weren't going to be given a chance to win, if you want to call it that. But we knew that we no longer had support from our nation, and it was the only thing that we felt we had was each other. Let me stop, because I get off into another diatribe altogether about that. But I'd like to thank both of you for sticking around for these 90 minutes. I hope our audience enjoyed the conversations. Leo, do you want to give us your final word for the evening? And, if there's any issues or anything that you'd like to talk about, you can give us your chance right now.
I want to go to Pence. And Pence, I think, is like a fox. He's sitting back, watching all the action. He's out of the firing line, but I think that Pence is sly like a fox. I think that with Pence, for sure, there's probably going to be passing laws not only affecting abortion rights of women, I think they're going to take them away with Pence, for sure. He's going to have the opportunity to put more Republicans in the Supreme Court. And who do you have? You got the both houses, you got the Supreme Court, and there's no question on my mind that Pence would go for the women's abortion rights, among other things. I think Pence is almost as bad as Trump. I'm looking at only one particular out. We got to get rid of both of them. There was a case in Pennsylvania some years ago. I don't know the real particulars, but it was an election case. And one side sued the other side for fraud in the election process. The court granted their application. They said this was fraud. And they set aside the entire election and put in the party that brought the suit the one that was wronged. Hopefully that can happen in this case. And I think the fact that Hillary is quiet, is sitting back, maybe she's aware of that law, and Democrats are aware of that law, but they're not publicizing it. But I think hopefully that might be the escape valve for America.
I think I have to say that's a little bit of wishful thinking because, we're in so deep and it's so difficult. I mean, just going through this process that we're going through. But that's why for 2018, I'm literally going to be begging people to go vote because if we can stop Pence from packing that Supreme Court, if we can get to Senate, we don't need that many more to get to Senate. I mean, we're real close. So if we can possibly get to Senate, that would be at least, and then maybe a lot more in the House. But 2018 is a really big, people really have to turn out to vote in 2018 to at least stop that and, do what they did to poor Obama. I mean, there were times I'd listen to President Obama and I'd think, man, this poor guy, he is killing himself. He is not golfing. He golfs, but nothing like this. And he worked, and I remember listening to him, and I loved listening to him because he actually said something. And he talked, and he was very articulate the way he spoke. And I liked, he had jobs bills, and he had all types of different ideas and things for student loans and all the different, and when he went through the explanation of eliminating the middleman so these kids could pay off these loans so much faster and cost so much less, and all the different things he had, and they never opened them up. So they never even opened them on the floor. And that, to me, was just a tragedy. And he probably had great things. I didn't know the particulars of them, but I know some of them. And in 2018, if somehow we can get the Democrats to control at least the Senate and maybe more in the House, then they might be able to obstruct, if that's what you want to call it, Pence, should it be Pence, then until we get to 2020, and then we got to get whoever it is, we got to get our guy, girl, whatever in. It just has to go that way in order to stop him from doing that. And that does worry me a lot, the Supreme Court, because just having Gorsuch in there is enough to make me need to go to get some Tums or something. But at age 49, that's really scary. So I don't know what more to add for tonight, but we'll see what develops this week. I'm sure it's going to be interesting. I thought last week was interesting, and then when this week happened, I said, wow, this is going to be really crazy. So we'll see what takes place.
Well, thank both of you for your time. And my final thoughts for this evening have to do with race. I've seen it rear its ugly head on many occasions. I'm 70 years old, so I've went through the 60s, the George Wallace's, the standing in front of the admissions office then governor, I forget who the then governor was, but Wallace was in Alabama. I'm thinking more of the governor that stood in front of James Meredith.
In Mississippi.
To me, at this point, I have to wonder, what did we accomplish with the Civil Rights Act? What did we accomplish with the Equal Opportunity Act, because it seems that it has fostered a cancer that we are looked upon as second-class citizens. Now we have the neo-Nazis talking about Jews, and as I said, when they were behind sheets, they might have been less effective than they are now. Now they're blatant, and they feel that they're so emboldened that they no longer have the need for the hood. They can put on a suit, a tie, a pair of jeans, whatever, but they're still able to carry a tiki torch, and they're still able to recite these very racist slogans. And it just seems to me that we have taken a step backwards with this administration. I pray for the people in Boston this weekend. I'm sure they're going to use the Freedom of Speech Act and Lawful Assembly to try to get into Boston. I'm not sure whether or not we can get a federal injunction to stop this, but I think this could be a potential bloodbath and a very bad example of civil disobedience. I'm not really looking forward to this Saturday, I'm hoping that we can repair relations in spite of this administration. So I thank everyone for listening tonight. I hope we had some very good insights. We explained a little bit about grand juries and how they operate, which I'm sure was very insightful for everyone. We thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great night, everyone. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
Okay, have a good week and peace.
You too.
Thank you.